This is the Visual Developers Podcast with your hosts, Lacey Kessler, Matt Varghese, and Ben Parker. Interviews, no-code reviews, tutorials, and more, we're here to talk about all things no-code.
Hey, everybody. Ben here with Visual Dev FM, back for another episode, and we're excited to be talking with you all. This week, we're going to do something a little different. We're talking about the end of Elliot, and just because this is an interesting topic, and anytime you use a tool and it just kind of goes away or it ends, you have this fight about how that internally, about how you feel about it. But this had some different circumstances, and so we just want to kind of cover all those. But before we get there, as always, we're going to jump into a no-code roundup, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Matt and Lacey.
Hello.
So let's get started. Let's jump into what's new in no-code. So first of all, I saw this post on Twitter Chris, first of all. I don't know how you say his last name. It is Alarcon. I think it's Alarcon. I'm going to say that's how you pronounce it. If I got it wrong, I'm sorry. He created a fun no-code project that is a basic sentiment analysis of Twitter's opinion of Kanye's 2020 presidential run, which is quite a topic to jump into. But he used a tweet thread. He talked about how he built it and how you could do the same sort of thing. So if you were looking to do some sort of sentiment analysis on Twitter replies or trends or hashtags, this would be a really, really, really great place to go jump in and learn. So I wanted to make sure that you guys knew that was out there. It was a pretty cool tweet thread. And so great resource if you're looking to dive into something like that. I also saw another tweet this week that was from and I'm going to get this wrong too, but Ko Nguyen, I think is his name. And he says, I think no code should be taught at high school instead of a programming language. My friends try to remember the whole program and Pascal to pass the exam without understanding it all. He said, no code is fun. It can be the foundation for more advanced programming knowledge, which we talk about a lot here, but I just love seeing other tweets and other people kind of discovering these pieces and finding out how powerful no code is, because it's super fun to see. Did have a tweet from, if you don't follow Adam Ceresco on Twitter, it's at Adam Ceresco, and we'll link in the show notes as always to his account. But he's been given a lot of great advice just about product, building product. And he's been talking about that in the context of no code, but he talked about how growing a product is kind of like building a muscle, and consistency is king. There are many muscles you can build, but you should focus on two, talking to users and analyzing user behavior. And he tweeted before he kind of jumped into the no code space about how there wasn't a lot of focus there. Even he did a Twitter poll. I've been following Adam ever since, and he posts so many great tweet threads and great ideas. So if you're not following him, definitely go check him out and make sure that you're reading those tweets. But this was a great tweet thread. If you're trying to figure out how you're going to grow your no code product or what it looks like once you get something built and launched, great follow on Twitter. Colin Winhall tweeted a thread of women in no code. This is something that Matt and Lacey and I talk about all the time. It feels like there are no women in no code. It's just, I feel like every tweet it's another guy posting about no code, and it's so cool to see people threading women makers and women in no code. So link in the show notes, go follow every person in that thread. It's definitely something you're going to want to see. And we're talking more about products. FinSuite. We had Joe on the podcast. He was on just a week or two ago. So if you haven't checked that out, go back and download that episode and give it a listen. Joe's interview is really good. Matt and Lacey did a really good job there, and I really enjoyed listening to it myself. Learned a whole lot. But in the tools that he talked about that are, you know, that he shares with the community, he has another one called Class Adder. I hear Adder and I think of a snake. But essentially, it's a tool to remove a class from an element or to add a class to an element. It's just like everything else he does. It's really top notch, and it makes it super easy for you to take advantage of interactions, and add classes and remove classes based on those interactions in Webflow. So he's got a bunch of cool examples, and as always, there's some pretty cool videos. So if you've been looking for ways to add and remove classes based on Webflow interactions, this is your send, right? So just think being able to hover over one element and add a class to another, and really kind of go wild. All kinds of powerful use cases here. But there's a link in the show notes. It's classadder-howto.webflow.io. But you can go check that out and jump in and get to using that. So super mega props to Joe. Thanks for putting that together. It's a really cool resource. I've played with it just a little bit, and I'm reeling with all the possibilities and all the things that I want to do. So pretty excited. I tweeted about something the past week. I haven't been present on Twitter because I've just been buried in work. But I put all of my no-code code in one place. And I know that sounds weird, but one thing that we talk about here a lot is we talk a lot about the fact that no code doesn't mean no code, and no code means some code or low code or, you know, different pieces. And I think just about every project that I work on, you know, I use code in some way, shape or form. And so I've started just, and I'm always find myself in the middle project. I'm like, I've written code for this before. Which project did I use it on? So then I dive over there and I grab it and then I reuse it in the project I'm working on. And I found myself looking for it too much. So I started to kind of consolidate it some. And then I realized other people probably want to use this. And so I started putting it all into a GitHub repository. And so it's available free. Go steal some of that.
I love this because I use I use custom code in my projects all the time. I use the Webflow.js one so often, which will help your events time, right? Essentially, and wait for Webflow to load, that I loaded it into my text expander. And so now I started doing like Webflow related code snippets. And so I responded to your tweet and I said, loading these into my text expander. I was not kidding. Like, I literally am building my own like little text expander of snippets that I'm gonna commonly use. Out of the ones you have in there now, do you have a favorite or a go-to that you use on everything?
That I use on everything. I would say, probably the form stuff, since I'm always using forms to connect to the CMS where you can, I have some hidden inputs and I have code that instantly refreshes the page whenever you submit a form, and all of those. I use those a lot.
Sweet.
And a lot of this, the form hacks. But I've added new stuff in since I even posted it. I wrote some code this weekend for a project I was working on and literally slapped it in there too. It's like, well, if I'm going to write it, let's go ahead and put it in here. And I've got more code coming. And so hopefully, one of my goals is to eventually have this also have links to Webflow example sites where you can go see it in action.
Cool.
I don't really have that yet, but where you can go clone it. So that is something that's on my list, but as I start working in this, you know, so can I take a tangent here real quick?
Please.
I'm going to make some people angry probably. But you know what? I hear a lot. I'm just going to go for it. I'm sorry. I hear a lot of times like, what's the GitHub of no code? It's a pet peeve of mine. I hear it all the time. Like, who's going to build the GitHub? There is no GitHub of no, GitHub is the GitHub of no code. If you want to store code in a repository, it's a perfect place to put it. You can export your code from no code builders and store it there. You can take the things that you write and put them there. You want to store images there. That's great. I think having that, there's no open no code standard, right? So it's not like you can, if you want to share a Zap, you can't share all your Zaps. If you use custom code in a Zap,
right,
you can't share that Zap. If you,
right,
you know,
Integromat, like I can share JavaScript. Right.
Yeah, right.
That's a one case.
Integromat, I can share my scenario, but guess what it is? It's a JSON file. And where should I probably store that? I don't know. GitHub's probably a pretty good place to store that JSON file, mm-hmm, to share with people. I don't know. For me, it's like, what's the GitHub of no code? GitHub is the GitHub of no code. Like, mm-hmm, people still write code. We still have code examples. If you want to store your stuff somewhere, store it there. And Matt has pressured me to talk about this some, and I haven't done it. But with most of my projects, I use GitHub. Essentially, if I work with a client or somebody on a project in Webflow, I will open a repository that is private, and any custom code I write, I commit to that GitHub repository, and it sits there, and the customer gets access to it, so they can see everything that I use. If nothing's hidden. I try to keep images there as well, or any art, so they can get at that if they need it. You know, and I try to document everything as best. I have a project checklist that I keep there, so they can follow progress. And then what I'll do when I launch a project, I like to open a public repository, and I will commit all of my code. So instead of having like some code in the one page of a Webflow project that's, you know, at the before body, yeah, I'll actually include it in GitHub and serve it with JS Deliver, and just have one file that gets included, and it's for everything. I do that for any CSS I write or JS. I try to take that approach.
It's amazing. I'm adding to the tangent, but I tweeted about this recently, I think. Somehow it came up on Twitter, and some people in no code might know Max Joles up in Portland, Maine. And he had, you know, DM'd me about this whole solution. And so I was like, yo, like Ben taught me how to do this, and it's crazy. And so I showed him essentially how I got VS Code to set up to, you know, commit to my repository, and that way I can just code in VS Code, and I don't have to copy paste publish. I can literally just copy and paste, or I literally just set up VS Code in GitHub, and then I'm good to go. And honestly, I recorded a 2-minute video for Max to show him kind of the more intricate details, and he responded with like something like, this feels like magic to be able to write code in VS Code and have it published to my Webflow site without me having to do any like republishing. You can just refresh the page. And so shout out to you, because you taught me that. Now I'm teaching others that.
Awesome. Well, it's something I keep meaning to make a video on, like, how can I, as a no coder who am like, I don't write a lot of code and I'm not familiar, sure, with how to commit, like, how do I get started? Where do I start? How do I do this? It's something I've been meaning to make a video on. Matt's been after me to like do something about it. And at some point I will. It's definitely something that I hope other people take advantage of this code there. And if there's something specific you want to see, I'm always down to collab and let's write some code, and then I'll throw it in there and hopefully others can use it. But link in the show notes, go grab that that code and those resources. Take advantage. I know it's weird talking about code in a no code podcast, but I just feel like it's one of those things where it's important. Card, moving on. Card now has custom templates. So I was on Twitter and I saw that AJ tweeted, this was at the end of June, custom templates are now a thing. Publish, action, save as a template, which is incredible. I know there's a few people have been like, oh, how do we get card templates? And I've heard that as a thing a few times. And to see this finally roll out is super exciting. Lisa, you're a card advocate and fan. Like, mm-hmm, is this something you've been wanting? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm excited about it. I actually didn't know about it until we just started, you know, recording here. And I've been watching AJ's tweet on a loop, and I'm just like, it's hard for me not to just zone in right now and just go straight into Card and start playing with it. So I think that's awesome.
Very cool. Happy for Card. I think that's a super, super cool, super, super cool addition to the product, and super exciting. So Card custom templates. just so you know, I never know how many R's belong in cards. So in our outline, a card has like 15 R's. I always get confused. Isn't it just two? I can never remember. I'm sorry, card users. But that's really cool. ClickUp. One of the things we don't talk about enough on this podcast, we're probably going to start covering some of it, is productivity and project management. I know a lot of no-coders who use ClickUp to track and manage their projects. Matt is an avid ClickUp fan. I love
it. Run my entire agency off of it. We put docs in there, tasks in there, bring in contractors. Ben and I disagree very much so on ClickUp, but I love the platform.
I like ClickUp. Sometimes I'm convinced that Matt has ClickUp stock. That's all I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm. If I could buy stock, 100% would. That's how much I believe in the product.
Matt secretly has equity or owns part of the company. That's how much he talks about ClickUp. Like, 100% believe, like, if you go back and figure out who is in charge of ClickUp somewhere, Matt's back there pulling the strings is what it feels like.
Yeah, you caught me.
He caught you. No, but it's cool. ClickUp is a cool, cool piece, cool app. And they got some funding. They raised $35 million from Craft Ventures, which is really cool. Link in the bio if you want to go check out the article about that. But if you are hesitant or unsure about whether you should be all in on ClickUp, I think this is a pretty good sign that you should probably jump all in on ClickUp.
And I'm pretty sure, I think they lock in, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure they grandfather prices. And right now they're incredibly great. So I totally agree. I think if you were... I don't have equity, but I would say, yes, go sign up for ClickUp, get the highest premium plan you can get and get locked in right now before rates go up.
I'm reading this outline in ClickUp and
it's true.
At Webflow, we've been using ClickUp. So it's a cool tool. And if you're looking for something, project management, if you were on the fence, maybe worth you diving in and checking out. Lots of cool new features coming out recently too, which is neat. So the last thing in our no code roundup is going to actually lead us into the main thing. Elliot tweeted, and I would love to tell you what they tweeted, but the tweets don't exist. So here's what we're going to do. We're just going to spend some time talking about the end of Elliot.
Before it even got started.
Shots fired. Jeez.
And, well, it's sort of true. And listen, a few disclaimers here. Our aim is not to take shots at anybody, really. Like, we're not trying to disparage anybody. But, like, if you invest time in learning a tool, it's kind of one of those things, like, I've spent all this energy learning Webflow and using Webflow. If it, you know, if something happened and it folded, I would be like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do? Right. I think anytime you have use a tool, especially as a no coder, you're not coding things, right? It's something you really lean on. There's questions that you have. And this field felt, this whole timeline of events felt super weird. And so we were just like, it's hard not to talk about this. And so, not presenting this as facts or saying whatever, right? We're just going to go through the timeline really quickly. I'm going to, in less than a minute, cover the timeline. And then we're going to go back and go through it and talk about it. So
keep in mind, everything was nuked. So this is our essentially, from what we remember and what we can piece together from the screenshots and remaining tweets.
Yeah.
So Elliot V1 comes about. People are using the product. So there is actually a first version. So I'm going to pause. Well, no, I'm going to keep going. We're going to come back to Elliot V1. So Elliot V1 is people are using the product. They have e-commerce stores on Elliot. Okay. Elliot V2 is announced. It's a really big deal. It's supposed to be able to sell globally, multilingual, all these different pieces. They released a sweet hype video, which we'll get to, but showed nothing of the product. But it was a really cool video. And when we didn't see any screenshots of the product, I know our conversation internally was like, where's the product in that? But we'll keep moving, come back to that. Sergio, actually, I think he had a camera following around for a while, filming him. It's kind of like a documentary thing. He hired Marco and Clayton. They hired a firm called Andela, which is kind of a remote engineering team to help build the product. And one of the famous tweets from Sergio, which you can't go find now because his Twitter doesn't exist, was that, you know, they were going to make a decision to prioritize kind of marketing over product, at least internally for them. Sergio took part in like kind of the future is no code from Adalo. They had V2 launch coming. It was recently, and it was supposed to, Elliot version 2, this huge thing everybody was hype about, was supposed to launch. And then it didn't launch. And the reason on Twitter, of course, you're not going to be able to go read it now, was that it was a possible denial of, DDoS, denial of service attack. And then, like, it was a day or two later, they were like, okay, now we're launching in December. And it was...
Right.
Wait, hold
6 months. Yeah, 6 months delay from
because of denial attack. Of service attack. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that was different. And then, I mean, it's a week. I mean, that very same week, I think Sergio tweeted about some of the chaos around it. You can pull my funding or work against me, but you won't be able to keep us down. Don't quote me on that because once again, that's just you can't go read it. And then the next thing we know, Elliot doesn't exist. It shuts down. Elliot has deleted all their tweets. You can't read any tweets on their account. Sergio wiped his account and has a new handle. And now Elliot doesn't exist. And so if you were a no-code maker who was investing in a product, I think this is one of the things that comes up all the time. What if this product shuts down and you literally built your business on top of it? What do you do? And so I really feel bad for folks who were using this product and were selling e-commerce, but apparently they weren't super secure. And so we'll talk about that. Let's just jump all the way back to the beginning of the timeline. So I wanted to do a quick run through of how we remember it. You might be listening and going, oh, you forgot X, and I probably did. But we did our best to kind of reconstruct here. So Elliot version one. So when Elliot came out, and we really learned of Elliot, no one was more hype about Elliot than Matt. And he was super on that Elliot train, and he
got recorded. Access to Elliot. We talked about it a lot. I was so pumped.
And then, so what was your experience with Elliot? What was your, like, what do you remember about that?
Okay.
Because I remember you used it and you were like, I am super disappointed.
Okay. So first of all, before we even get to the product, Elliot V1, they announced it or whatever, and they were saying, hey, we're taking users for early access. I signed up. I think I DM'd Sergio and I was like, hey man, I would love to try this. And he was like, hey, I'll bump you up to the top of the list. Never got access, ever. And that was like months of waiting. A friend of ours, who will remain unnamed, gave me access to their account. And that's how I actually logged into Elliot to play around with it. And it didn't feel like a good backend. Like, I think it looked okay, but it just felt like the UX and UI, it just wasn't there. And I was like, all right, like, it's V1, like, they'll get better over time. And I was like, it's an early stage startup. So I was like, giving them the benefit of the doubt. I was still like so hype about it, as you can tell on previous episodes. Obviously, I never mentioned any of this outside of my, inner circle, but that was my experience with V1. I kind of was like, I was actually pretty underwhelmed because Elliot, as we'll learn, is very good at marketing, but it is hard to see the product in action. But that was kind of like my experience with V1. And granted, I literally never got access to it. It's just, I happened to be friends with someone that did, and that's how I got access.
And then after V1, I just remember in a very Matt message. So we have a Slack that me and Lacey and Matt are in.
He's going to put me on blast like this.
No. And Matt starts, this is a typical Matt start of his message of, yo. And then it's just a link to the Elliot V2 announcement. And it's like, okay, Matt was talking about, hey, is this going to get better? Like, maybe this is better.
Right. Because I remember writing it. I remember writing the day I tried out Slack on our friend's account, or not Slack, Elliot on our friend's account. I was like, this is so underwhelming. And literally both of you were like comforting me because of how like disappointed I was, because I was like, this is, I was so devastated about how underwhelming it was. And this, again, this is not a knock on like the founders. I get it. It's hard to build something good, but like the product was like really overhyped. At least V1 was. So yeah, like I was hoping it would get better with that V2 announcement, but I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah, I remember we did have to comfort him. Like it was one of those things where it was like,
oh, he was devastated.
It was like somebody kicked him in the shin and ran away. And
I've never wanted an underdog to win more. Like that's what this is.
Yeah.
This is David versus Goliath. I'm pretty sure there's an article that came out about that. I don't take credit for that. It's like, cause it's like Shopify versus Elliot. Mm-hmm. And Shopify and Elliot was taking shots Elliot was taking shots at Shopify. And I was like, love it. Love this underdog. Like
they mentality. Were, weren't they? They were a little love salty towards him, right?
Oh man, it gets like better towards the end. Something that we didn't put in this outline, I just remembered. But so that was my experience so far.
Wasn't Sergio like going directly at the CEO guy? What's his name? Toby.
Yeah.
Yeah, like going directly at him in his tweet storms and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I look. It's a good way to, I guess, get traction for your product. Create work. Like, look. This is a tangent, but like, look at DHH and Jason Fried. They have so completely made like a great, you know, marketing strategy based on beef as marketing. In fact, Paul Graham used that term the other day in a tweet, and DHH liked it. He was like, "Yeah, it's our strategy." And so, like, beef as marketing works if you have a product to back it up. DHH, Jason Fried, great builders. They have like their product, like Ben, you use Hey, like. It's a great product and it lives up to the hype of like replacing traditional email. But like, if you use beef as marketing, you have to have a damn product. Like that's the thing. So yeah. Call me crazy. No, I mean,
you're not wrong. Right. And then they announce V2, they say, okay, V2 is coming. And so you message us and it's like, okay, we're back on that hype train. Here we go. Where, you know, this is happening. And they released a sweet hype video. I don't know if you remember it, but it was like great music, a lot of cool animations. They launched a landing page to announce it. All these really cool features and a nice set. Being able to build e-commerce without code. And, you know, at that point, it feels like, I don't know, it was hard for me to turn on Twitter or my timeline without seeing something from Sergio, right? It was like, he was all over the place. He tweeted with an energy that is like unmatched, right? Like he was just,
I like
you
that.
Talked like, about.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Beef cool. as a strategy was really engaged and was tweeting about the product. And, you know, for as much as, and I'll give them credit, right? Like for as much as they marketed really hard and we say, you know, like it was really hype on some of that. He did a good job trying to explain what they were trying to accomplish on Twitter. Like he responded to tweets, talked about their vision, what they wanted to do, what they were trying to get done. Marco and Clayton are there. They have this firm that's, so it's not like Elliot, to our understanding, it's not like they had a team of devs. What they did is they had a contracted team of devs and engineering building this product, and their core team was working on marketing and structure.
I think the core team, and again, this is just our opinion, what we kind of think went on. I think the core team was focused on like maybe marketing and community, and they hired this firm, according to a tweet that is now nuked. Sergio mentioned they hired Andela, which is a remote contracting firm, which is a lot of, I think, startups use in order to, like, if you only have so much runway, you hire remote to other geos that might not cost you as much as a San Francisco engineer, and they build your product. And I think maybe a lot of times that works. I think maybe Ben and I were talking about this before the podcast recorded. I think maybe that's what ClickUp did before they were funded. they use, you know, one of these remote engineering teams. They get to build features, build their MVP, and go from there. But I think that might have been like to their demise in this instance. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, this is one of those things just where this is why we want to talk about it. It's kind of like we need closure. It's not like we're trying to pick on Elliot.
Yeah,
right. It is more of
they
like
just
what
disappeared.
What happened? Like, it went from this company that Matt adored, was a little underwhelmed with the original version of the product, but was totally on board with the version 2. And it's just like now they don't even like, not only did like their founder, their CEO leave, like they just don't even exist. Like it's gone. And you know, I think they helped their store owners get their products and everything out, you know, and so they could take it elsewhere. But man, you know, what a weird time. So you've got Sergi hiring them, Sergio hiring them. You have, they hired this IntelliFirm. And then like we talked about, there's some weird tweets from, like, he was all about it on Twitter, but about how he made a decision to prioritize marketing over product. And just we're curious, like that's kind of something looking back that stuck out in our mind. Like,
it's a bold decision. And like, look, go for it.
Oh, I'm just thinking, why would you do that when I get it. You bring the attention. People will love your brand. They'll grow with you. Like, I get all that. It's just so interesting to me when you're like going against a giant that is, I mean, could be argued as like a household name. And so I just think that that's really interesting that they chose that, and their marketing was, I mean, they got attention for sure. So
100%. Yeah. And they had a lot of really good, like they did. I think the reason they over-prioritized marketing is because they knew marketing really well. And Sergio, I think by trade is an engineer, but I think he decided that he's also a very good marketer. And I believe he's a very good I think that's one of his core strengths. But it just goes back to that principle of beef is marketing. I think it just gets a lot of traction. People love feud. Like, for example, there's this new startup called Use Fluent. I follow the founder on, or one of the founders on Twitter. And so what Use Fluent does is, you know, this is a tangent again, but like it's a Chrome extension. It'll translate, let's say you want to learn French, it'll translate certain words on the page into French, and you can hover over it and learn the English word. And it's supposed to help you, you know, learn French. But their first tweet, I think, from their Use Fluent account was at Duolingo, we're coming for your ass. And so like they got a ton of traction that way. And I think, you know, and I think that's how they got their first few users. So like, I think beef's marketing works. I acknowledge that. But again, it's one of those things where you just have to have product. Otherwise it just doesn't make sense. And I think they shouldn't have over prioritized marketing over product, but you know, they did. And that's where we are today.
And that leads us to the next step in the timeline, which was version 2 was supposed to launch. It was, you know, end of June, beginning of July, somewhere in here. I think end of June. I'd love to tell you the exact date, but once again, you're not going to be able to find this anywhere.
It was June 18th.
June 18th. There you
I'm
go.
I'm almost positive it was like etched on my heart and then never came true.
Matt is so disappointed. If you want, Matt, do you have a buy me a coffee page? We should all buy you a coffee.
Got you. Yep.
For this heartbreak. So launch day comes, and then I remember kind of being just aware of like, okay, I want to track this today. I want to see like what this looks like. I was hoping that somebody at Elliot would release some videos of like, hey, this is what the product is like. And, or even somebody who's using Elliot would have made a video or two about, you know, the new experience. You know, one thing that was weird to me, and I guess it's not super odd, but you know, a lot of times when you have a new product coming, people have beta tested it, and you know, there's phases where people got their hands on it, and you see people tweeting about features and different functionality and what they liked. One thing I noticed leading up to Hype Day, it's not like I follow a bunch of Elliot Power users, so I could have missed it, but I just didn't see a lot of that, you know. But then launch day comes, and there was, I remember specifically thinking, I'm going to track this today, and there was just nothing.
Yeah.
And then I think Matt sent it to like our group DM, hey, check this out. And it was kind of like, oh, they had a denial of service attack and then they're not launching. It's been postponed. And I'll be honest, I forgot completely about it after that. I was like, oh, that really sucks. Like, and I really did. I felt bad for the, because I know what it's like when you like, you work on something as a group or as a team and you get ready to launch and something that's out of your control or that is just a force bigger than you affects you. And it's like, oh my gosh, now this isn't going to go the way I wanted. And, you know, so, I mean, honestly, I felt bad. I felt bad for the team who had worked really, you know, hard. And I forgot about it that day. I mean, honestly, once I read that news, it was kind of like, okay, I'm not tracking this. I'm not even thinking about it. I've got things, other things to do. And then I see that, like, Sergio basically, well, right after that, I guess there were people who were doubting them and asking, like, what was up? Because it felt weird. It's like, oh, you're not launching today because there's a denial of service, but you're not launching at all? Like, you know, there's a day or two, and he tweeted a few things about, you know, go ahead and pull my funding or whatever, but you won't keep me down. Or
I think they announced a new launch date first, which was December, which was
December 25th.
Right. Yeah. Christmas Day. And it's like
Christmas Day.
And then people were like, wait, what's going on? And then like, right. it seemed kind of fishy. Like even me, like the dude with the glimmer in his eye for Elliot, like even I was just like, something's not right here. And then I think the day after that is when Sergio had this like tweet, and again, we don't have it. There's not going to be a link to the tweet. That was like, you can pull my funding and, you know, bet against me, but you'll never like keep me down. And then people were like, wait, pull my funding. Cause Elliot raised, I think, you know, I don't have the numbers up in front of me. Like I think around $5 million. I think, you know, even before this, Elliot had a lawsuit issue, which we also didn't mention here, of like, I think Elliot was suing someone and someone was suing Elliot. And there was like all these, there's a very large Twitter thread going on. I'm not 100% sure we'll link to it or not, but it's got the details of the lawsuit there. So that was an issue.
And that was before the V2 launch. I remember Sergio was really loud on Twitter. And when that happened, it got really quiet all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they kind of came back full force closer to launch. But yeah, I mean, once again, that's the problem with reconstructing this with no tweets because.
Right. We can't remember the exact timeline. But yeah, that tweet was weird. The pulled the funding tweet. And then so people were like, what's going on? And it got really quiet. And then the next day, Sergio put out this tweet and it was just like, hey, I am resigning from my position as CEO and chairman or something like that. And it was a short message. And then everyone was just like, wait, what?
He ended it with peace out.
Yeah.
And it made me think of Seacrest out from American Idol. Sorry.
It was stupid. Well, hey, however we can remember these tweets, like I'll take it. And so I remember I told someone on Slack, in our Slack group, which you two can probably put together, and then I told someone on Twitter DM, I was like, this is the end of Elliot. Like, they haven't announced it, but the reason they announced the December 25th date is so I assume the investors could figure out the plan to disband and figure out a way to end the company. And, you know, I think that morning that I sent something out, I think the next day or something like that, they announced that the end of Elliot. They published a letter on it. I think I still have a copy of it in my Google Drive, if that hasn't been deleted too. But it's so weird. They just like, they nuked their account. Sergio is no longer at his account. He's Sergi V, kind of like Gary V on Twitter now. I think Marco and Clayton and the other maybe couple of employees are on to other things, but it's like, wait, what? Like, what just happened? There was no explanation. And like, and this is getting too into the weeds, but a lot of people were doing digging the day that, you know, the end of Elliot article came out, and one person, Ryan Culp, I think if his tweet's still up, we'll link to it, but a big glaring concern is that all customers' personal data, personally identifiable data, PII, was in the HTML on the product page. So imagine you place an order on their on someone's, you know, store, Elliot store. It will return it to the page in just like an array of like everyone's data, like address, shipping address, billing address, name. I think that's what Ryan deleted his tweet and then reposted his tweet, blurring out these details. But from what we can tell, it's very personal info and it's in the source code itself. It's almost like,
wouldn't that be intentional? How do you screw that up?
What I imagine is the code was not supposed to be shipped to production ever. And like they are maybe doing it for debugging purposes. And then they just ignored it or hoped that no one find, like, again, these are all speculations.
Yeah, if it happened, because we don't have proof of any of that, right?
Yeah, this is all tweeted. That's right.
But there's the end of Elliot. And so they have this letter, and I have it here. I can read it. But Elliot also tweeted, you can ask Sergio about his own, I think they said personal issues. But he's stepping down, and they wouldn't comment on it. And then this is the end of Elliot, and they link to this Google Doc. Well, it was weird how they said that, like, you can ask Sergio about, once again, it was super passive-aggressive.
So many questions.
But here's what the letter said. I'll read it really quickly. Elliot was conceived to make starting a global online business as easy as possible. Combined all the best in-class features of e-commerce platforms with the ability to ship anywhere in the world and free so everyone would have access to this opportunity. The need for this was reflected by the waiting list we built of over 7,000 people and thousands of early access users that have created stores on Elliot. The last 2 weeks have been difficult for the Elliot team. What began as planning for a successful launch and sharing Elliot with the world spiraled into a triage scenario, picking up the pieces from a failed launch. Well, the details of Sergio's personal situation, there it is, that's what they mentioned in the tweet, remain at his discretion to share. We can say that Sergio is no longer in a place where he felt willing to lead the company and has since resigned. Elliot will be winding down its operations by July 15th, and the team will be moving to other things. I'm curious as what that means, like if those people are moving on or if Elliot's going to still try to, I don't know. To our customers and partners, Elliot was created to enable and empower e-commerce all over the world. We're disappointed we let you down. If you're an existing merchant, we recommend exporting your customer and order information, then transitioning to another platform. Please reach out if you have any questions about this. We know this is hard, and we're here to support you all the way to the end. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to build Elliot. None of what we've accomplished would be today would be possible without you. If you're a partner, we'll be in touch to discuss unwinding any efforts. In the meantime, please hold off on any continued development. To our team, we're grateful to have worked with you side by side on a shared vision and mission, and hope to be able to support you in your new endeavors. To our investors, your belief in Elliot and our team is what gave us a shot at doing something meaningful in the world, and it's frustrating to know the potential of our work must be put on hold. If you have any questions, please feel free to email Clayton or Marco at, and it lists their email addresses.
Wild. And that's wild and incredibly sad, because I wish it was what I wanted it to be. That said, I think the team is really smart. Like, I think those people are really smart people. I don't know too much about Clayton, but I know like Marco came from 2PM, WebSmith's company, and he was like a direct-to-consumer strategist. I think everyone on the team was very good at what they did. It's just, I guess it just wasn't meant to be, which is super depressing to say out loud, but you know, maybe this is going to be time for someone else to challenge Shopify and build an e-commerce platform. Or maybe it was just meant to be that it's Shopify versus Webflow. And well, I guess I'd be doing a disservice if I didn't say, like, you know, WooCommerce and Magento and things like that, but you know, the two main players.
Yeah.
But yeah, wild story. Wild story.
It's an unbelievable story. And like I said, we didn't do this so we could just talk about how terrible the Elliot team is. I think silently we were all rooting that this was going to work, you know, like we, like, as being a part of the no-code community, we always want to see no-code tools thrive, and we want to see people have access to build and do things.
Right.
But part of this was just for us to have our own closure about it. And like I said, hopefully it's been interesting to you too. And we want to say thanks for hanging out and listening. Any final thoughts before we shut this down?
I think it's sad for the people who worked on it. You know, like I think, you know, we've all worked on products before, and when you pour so much into it and then nothing happens, it's so disheartening and devastating. And I just, my heart hurts for them. I don't even know these people, but I just, you know, from being in similar shoes, it's hard. So I want to see good things come out of this, though. I'm hopeful that good things will come out.
Yeah. Same here. I wish nothing but the best to everyone involved, not just the founders, but the employees that they had too. Like, I think, like I said, they're all very smart people. And so I hope whatever they do next is very successful. Maybe just this one wasn't meant to be. Maybe we'll see. Maybe they'll come back in a few years and like they'll perfect the idea and it'll be in Elliott V3 and it launches. But
Matt's still hanging on to hope.
I'm still hanging on. Look, I'm always going to root for the underdog. Always. And so we'll see. But yeah, best of luck to them. I really wish them nothing but the best.
A rational love of the underdog. Yeah, I'm with you. I echo both of your statements. I don't really think there was any bad intent. At least I hope there wasn't. But I just think that it's just, I don't know, we were talking about it. We were like, well, we should probably just talk about this on an episode just because it's something that comes up frequently in conversation. So maybe we'll be able to get our closure and move on now and not talk about this on a regular basis, but it is intriguing. I am curious to know what really happened. And I think that, like I said, I feel bad for their team. Like both of you said, I also feel bad for the people who invested time learning a tool and building on it and now don't have that available to them. You know, that's a bummer too. I would hate to be in that spot. It's like when I found Macaw and I just started building with it and then Envision bought it and it was like, no more Macaw. And I was like, oh, like I was so excited. So, but it's what led me to find Webflow. So, you know, silver lining everywhere.
It worked out.
So, well, thanks everybody for listening and hanging out. Really enjoyed the conversation. And be back next week with another episode. But until then, stay safe and take it easy. Bye.
Deuce.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to visualdev.fm. You can find us on your favorite social media platform at visualdev.fm.